And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 136.
136.
I'm Silas Lindenstein.
I'm Samantha Rund.
And we are your hosts for Black and a Half, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably.
Probably.
Yeah. Episode number 136. Our very special guest is a very funny, good friend of ours, comic Monica Nevy. Monica Nevy's here to discuss her origin story, and she has a couple, two albums coming up. Do we still call them albums?
That's what I've been calling them.
Okay, because I'm not. I was like, wait, I'm elderly now. Like, I don't know if I'm. Yeah. I call them albums. And we talk about her. Find out how she got to where she is. She's been a staple of the Pacific Northwest, and she's a traveling comic in normal times. I guess I don't need that disclaimer anymore. Everyone knows.
Everyone's like, we know. Thank you for bringing it up again.
We talked to her about we had a little discussion on Chappelle and on Saturday Night Live and the state of where we expressed our opinions on what about comedy, sort of, and how we'd like to see it crafted. That was a very fun discussion. We don't often get like fellow connoisseurs of comedy on here where we get to speak on the craft like that. So I had fun.
It was fun. Time. And I was very opinionated. I wasn't as quiet as I normally am because I watched it twice. So I had a lot to say.
We like your opinion, Samantha.
Thank you. I like giving them.
Yeah.
When they're actually there.
Yeah. When you're not afraid of getting banned for giving them.
If I don't have it, like, I don't
she
feel
gets
like I have
nervous
to...
about saying, like, we did a couple of movie reviews. She's afraid to say anything bad about them because she's like, well, what if I auditioned?
Well, yeah, because clearly they were calling me up to come on set. You know, like
are they gonna not let you go to the movie theater anymore? Like, what's happening?
Because I can like often see both sides of things too. So I often don't like to give like a black and white opinion because I'm like, well, it's not that simple, is it? Like, let's discuss or let me just listen and hear more. So, you know,
what's your astrological sign?
Guess.
Well, I'm trying to remember are you a Libra?
You should not have to guess because we've had this conversation so many times. The listeners probably know.
Do I?
Come on.
I'm old. I can't remember.
My best friend that I never hang out with. Okay, not my actual best friend.
Oh, Gemini.
If you're listening, best friends, love you. But no, Silas, how many times do we joke about like how your wife and me are like so similar?
Oh, yeah.
But we've met like briefly. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Same month. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I do have a bunch of Libra in my chart. So yeah, you guys.
Oh, see?
That
I called it. I knew that.
I know. You know.
So hey, yes. Fun episode. If you enjoy it, please go to Apple Podcast and rate and review the show. It helps us a lot. If you're loving what we're bringing here, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/blackandahalf. And for just starting at $1 a month, you can become one of our members of the League of Extraordinary Listeners.
Nice. Yeah.
Or you can join a little bit more a month. You can join the Inner Circle and become members like Tara Widener and Stefan Ward and Keith Nagel, and you can get your name said at the front of each episode to thank you for being a supporter until that list is too long, and then we'll have to give you something else. And also, Patreon members are going to get early access to see a showing of Black and a Half's latest short film, Sip and Style, which featured Samantha Rund in the lead role. And we're going to do that after. It can't happen until December minimum. So we'll see. But you'll get early access before anyone else does, Patreon members. So become one today.
Nice.
Yay.
Today's episode brought to you by Silas Lindenstein at Skyline Properties. If you're in the Pacific Northwest and looking to buy or sell a home, go ahead and email me at silas@blackandahalf.com. And it's also brought to you by
Beyond Technique Coaching. If you're looking for performance skills to help improve your life, for those interviews, auditions, public speaking, even relationship stuff, you can always reach me at beyondtechniquecoaching@gmail.com and check out that podcast at Beyond Technique.
Sweet.
Yes.
All right. But that's that podcast. But this podcast here.
Yes. That's right.
We want you to open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 136, Monica Nevy, Meditation Master.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by, stand by, stand by, stand by. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive.
You guys saw Saturday Night Live?
Yes.
Recently, the Dave Chappelle. Are you both Dave Chappelle fans? Overall,
yeah. Overall, yeah. I'm not. I don't. I think recently some people have been maybe. You jump off the bandwagon when people get more popular again, but I don't feel like that. However, I wasn't like a diehard gonna wait in line fan before that.
Not to consume everything that you hear comes out.
I think he's great and I think he's very funny, but yeah, not like camp outside.
Samantha, are you a camp outside? I know you were a Chappelle Show fan, right?
I really like Chappelle, but I don't know if I would camp outside to see anyone really.
I don't know why that's my standard.
I mean, that it totally makes sense what you're saying. I was just thinking, I'm like, would I? I'm like, would I do that for anyone? He's one of my favorites. Yeah, I was real excited that he was going to be hosting. I was like, yes, something to look forward to. And it's like he hosted at the last election. Scared. I was like, is it going to go that way again? Or hopefully it's going to be, you know, the election goes the way that we want it to and not that way. It'll be great to see what he has to say. And so just either way, at least it was something to look forward to on Saturday.
Okay. Again. So there were some reactions to it. Some people commented, this came up, Monica, because Samantha and I got on a thread where somebody had mentioned they just thought that there's a joke that just seemed really misogynistic. Like, it was the line where he said Trump was talking about the bleaching, people use bleach, he was spitballing ideas there, bleach, and then that woman, the director there, the virus thing, she sat there and didn't say anything. And he said, that's why I only get paid half. And I heard that, and both me and my wife both kind of cringed. I'm like, oh, and I was kind of like, oh, it was someone going so good. Why'd you? And then I was like, I was waiting for more from it. Cause I thought, well, there's going to be more to that. And then I loved the rest of it, and I was kind of waiting for a button on the end to bring it back to that or something, and there wasn't. And I just kind of felt like, well, that was a wasted. Why? Why did you say that? That wasn't cheap. And of course, people were defending, saying, "Oh no, jokes. It's just a joke. It's not misogynistic." And I don't know. I was curious. I mean, because I'm a guy, so who am I to say anyway? I thought it was. Without a point, I felt like it was a misogynistic joke. Or, I don't know, what are your feelings on that kind of thing? Like, that level, I don't know, his level? doing those jokes.
I felt like I expected more out of it as well. Like, I definitely cringed the same way you said you did, because I was like, oh, that, you know. I mean, obviously, I cringe when people say that, because it's like, oh, that's me, you know. But but I did with him, you know, you kind of expect it to come back to something. And he kind of kept talking about it, too. He was like, or 70 cents, you know, whatever. So I thought it was going somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought I just expected more out of him. I wasn't like mad or offended. I just was like a disappointed dad a little bit, you know, like I expected better out of you. But I thought, I mean, he's still a comic, like a, you know, that would get good laughs in a club, honestly, unfortunately. But
Samantha, what was your feelings on that?
Man, it actually turned into quite a heated discussion for me and someone, I shall say, just based off of like the merit of the joke, which is just lets you know how much time we have on our hands that we could have like a 2 hour and how much we like to dissect comedy. So I saw it on what I guess it would have been. Yeah. Saturday night, I think. Sunday morning, whatever. And then my initial reaction was the same like you guys. Like, I was like, I cringed, you know? And then I'm like, whatever. I love Dave. I think he's great. I don't think he's a misogynist. So I was just like, you know what? I think he's going for something other than what I got. Not a fan of that joke, still a fan of his. Moving on.
Yeah.
But then I think like after seeing the comment on Facebook and like more conversations surrounding it with other comedians and this and that and blah, 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 this whole sort of discussion of like, well, if you're a comic, can you ever be offended by what a comic says? And it's like, well, I can find something somebody says offensive without finding them offensive. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't think I'd ever find Dave Chappelle offensive, because I feel like I know enough of his comedy and stuff to know where he's coming from isn't like ever really trying to like actually punch down at anybody.
Yeah.
But like the way that some of his jokes come off might not, you know, be in line with who he really is. But I will say the second time I watched it, because I watched it like probably 10 minutes before we got started, just so it was really fresh in my head for our podcast. And because I was thinking, well, what was it about that joke? Was it because I'm like, I'm a girl and I don't like that? Or I'm a woman, I don't like that? Or is it like, was it just not crafted as well as the other ones? Or like, what was it? Because he talked about, you know, obviously race stuff, obviously like Trump stuff, obviously like drugs, you know, like all sorts of other things that could be potentially offensive to people. And again, I wasn't offended by this joke. I just was like, eh. I think it's because, yeah, where he left it, I felt like it was just the, it just seemed like it was a funny thing that he thought of in the moment. And he wasn't necessarily like making a bigger comment about that is what women deserve. Mm-hmm. But it was the joke went, like you guys said, the joke went like, that's why you get paid half. Yeah. That's why you get paid half. Oh, wait, no. What do you get paid? Like 70% or something? Either way, it's too much. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
That's how it ended. And I was like, no. No.
It's like the landing didn't stick, kind of.
Right.
Like I was trying to make the point that without a, I feel like it becomes misogynistic, at least without a point to be made.
Right. Yeah. Because I felt like that was the point, was the, like the joke structure and everything was there. And the turn I thought was clever, but then it ended it with the lesson is you guys don't make as much because you shouldn't.
Like, cause I have a joke about the women getting paid less, like but it's in reference of the game Monopoly. And I'm explaining like why my wife makes more money than me, like the white privilege money and stuff. And then I talk about pairing into the game of life, but I am making a point about the whole thing, not saying, and I even say it's not fair. It's just how it is. It's realistic. And then there was somebody wrote something, because it's, if nothing else, Chappelle causes people to discuss comedy. Right. And how you reflect on it and stuff. And there's something I really like, because I know some people, what is that comic out of Australia that people were complaining that that's not comedy?
Hannah Gadsby?
Yes.
Is it?
I think that. Yeah. And I love this. Another a comic out of LA, Kate Quigley.
Yeah.
She wrote, stand-up doesn't have to be funny every single second. A set can have moments that are poignant, thought-provoking, intense, vulnerable, insightful. Number one job is to make you laugh. But the whole point of great art is to make you feel, think, and question. If not, why even hold a mic? And, I mean, I'm not sure it's because I do know Kate gets involved in like acting as well. So I don't know if that's my bias because that I come from that too. Cause I've felt like the comics that I really admired aren't the punch every 30 seconds kind of comic. Though I admire that skill. The ones that I look up to are the ones that craft a story and, you know, and I am touched by things that they say. And so I did want to share that. And I guess I'm just curious, like, what you're two very different comics and how do you feel about, do you think stand up needs to be funny entirely?
And that's, I mean, I think what the biggest comparison to the Chappelle joke is that it didn't have a point, like you said. And so I think it's totally fine for stand-up to have moments where it's not funny if it's getting to a point. Like, but it's coming to either, okay. I mean, obviously a punchline, but it can have poignant points.
I didn't transition well into that, but his, like, the way the monologue ended wasn't on necessarily, he did end with a punchline, but he got this real serious moment that I was like, whoa, like, this really made me think about what he said. So that was what I was overall thinking. Like,
yeah. Well, I think it's changed a lot. I think stand-up used to be where it needed to be punchy all the time. And now, I mean, it is kind of a thing to be saying something important, mm-hmm. you know, and obviously it's more effective if you're funny while you're doing it. But it's a thing. I mean, I don't think I would ever intentionally compare Hannah Gadsby and Dave Chappelle normally, but there's like a bigger story to her special that some people were mm-hmm. for whatever reason upset about. And some of his newer stuff is a little bit more drawn out. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. it's like, he's got a lot of kind of story in the middle that does make you feel something else. And then there's always punchlines. I mean, they're still funny, but there are these longer, and it's not like you're getting bored though. You know, you're captivated by what he's saying anyway. So I don't think if you want to call it something else, sure. But I don't think stand-up has to be funny the whole time as long as there's points.
Okay. Samantha, what about you? Do you think it?
No.
Is your goal funny all the time? Do you like funny all the time or no?
Am I? That would be a miracle. That, no, I mean, I'm definitely not funny all the time. But some of the comics where they can be like joke. Some of those I do really enjoy, but I have to really be into the topic, I think, you know, because I guess I'm not going to mention names, but there was another host that was on SNL somewhat recently, who's like a great comedian, great joke structure, obviously funny, but like, I almost never care about anything that they're saying. And so I much rather have like a set like Dave Chappelle where I care about what he's saying. And like, maybe I'm going to listen for 2 minutes before laughing sometimes, but like, then I'm going to really laugh or I'm going to think, you know, so yeah, for me, it doesn't have to always be funny, but yeah, there will be funny elements or there's like a twist. It gets me to think or shifts my perspective.
That's interesting because I was thinking watching his monologue, how they had some stand-ups recently, and I just didn't enjoy their monologues as much as I liked his, and kind of why was that? And maybe that's it. I don't really care much for what they're saying. I mean, there was multiple. Who was it? Bill Burr, John Mulaney, like they've had more than one stand-up comedian even before him this season, and they were underwhelming a little bit, but his, I think I was a little bit nervous because at first I was like, well, maybe it's this crowd, you know, that they're like paying to be there and maybe that's what's making it weird. So I was a little bit nervous that his set would kind of be like the other ones, but then I was like way more into it and Yeah, maybe I just don't care what they're saying.
Well, one weird thing that I noticed since I did actually rewatch it today, which I normally don't rewatch them so close, you know, is I observed I enjoyed it more today than I did the first time. And even the joke where it was like what we were talking about, the joke where there's that like, oh, was it misogynistic? I didn't cringe as much today, probably because I knew where like it was coming.
Right?
but I think like the first day I was just in such this like election high and so happy. And I wanted to hear him like, you know, talk about other stuff. Even though this was great. I mean, it was really great. But like today I enjoyed it much better because I wasn't in my like election, like, ooh, this is great. And right. Don't talk to me about stuff that's super real right now. Like it can be real, but not that real.
Yeah. Oh, I got
that. Yeah.
Monica, you're kind of a road warrior, right? I like to get it out there. At least pre-COVID when we could.
I was gonna say in my past life for sure.
Do you in all the venues you go to, do you feel like you have room to develop artfully? Or do you feel like you, oh man, if I don't hit these punches every, because I know the old theory of a lot of the road dogs out there, but like you're the new generation, right? But we were both being told by the same people at the same time, you just succeeded. Like, oh, you gotta get a punchline in there every minute. You gotta do this so many, five a minute or whatever. And do you feel that pressure now that you have, like, on the road that you gotta hit it that much? Or do you feel room to play a little?
That's an interesting question. I think it depends on where I am, I guess. And,
do you have one act?
I don't know. I definitely feel more comfortable now. I don't know if that's just the years under the belt or the road itself. But I mean, sometimes I'm just not even really doing my act anymore. I'm just kind of having fun. I don't know. But it, like, if it's a new place that I haven't been, I probably get in that mode of like, okay, I got to hit them with this and this and this so that they know they trust me, you know, they know I'm good before I can get a little bit more comfortable. So it almost transforms like in the set. If like right up top, I'm going to do this, like, here's hard hitters. I know you're going to like, now I can kind of do, or at least feel out what else I can do after that. But I mean, and I've said this to people before, they're like, when do you decide, you know, people who don't know stand up very well, they're like, when do you decide what jokes you're going to do, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, a while before usually, but I leave some stuff out when I'm in Arkansas, or I put more stuff in if I'm in LA than I'm not, you know, or whatever, you know, or dumber stuff. Or if a joke is leaning on a, you know, misogynistic side or something, I wouldn't do that on the West Coast, but you could get away with it somewhere else, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Not that any of my material is really that divisive, or it's definitely not misogynistic, but, you change it around based on where you are. So I feel like depending on where I am, I can be more artful or just comfortable in general.
Do you feel like people know you at the end of your act? Like,
I know that they think they do. It's
is there
based on the way they talk to me.
Do you feel like, is there a different person you're portraying on there to them, or is it?
I don't think so. I mean, I think now there's like more of this weird me that's coming out a bit. And I like that because that is a bit more of who I am. But my, like, on stage has always been kind of just what I have thought of, you know, I don't do a character. It's not really physical. I'm pretty much the same amount of energy as I am now, you know? And so it's pretty close to me. I also write mostly about stuff that's happened to me or so, you know, so I do think they know me in some ways. Of course there's my own personal belief that I'm like, you don't really know me, don't touch me, you know, but I think they think that they know me, which is probably a good thing, I guess. Yeah. I mean, they feel comfortable or relatable, I guess. I don't know.
It's the intimacy of stand-up, I think, that you... Like, I forget that I'm not, like, good friends. Like, I am friends with some radio people, but not, like, good friends. Because I would hear them every day.
Oh, right, yeah.
Well, yeah.
And being like, I'm buddies with... Oh, no, I guess... No, that's a one-way conversation. They're just...
Well, and just podcasts make that so...
Yeah.
Amplified, I think, because you are more relaxed podcasting. So podcasts, especially some of those bigger ones where I've watched like their fans come and see them, they are like oddly invested in these people and they forget that they have never met them.
Right. So yeah.
Like, yeah. Stop crying.
Well, and also,
but yeah, but I mean, podcasting is so conversational. So it's,
yeah.
Right. Well, it's interesting. Yeah. And that's what you're saying too, Monica. It's interesting too, because I think like when I'm listening to podcasts, if it's not like while I'm working or something, it's like, oh, well, I could have just been out of the shower. Or, you know, you're like in some sort of very personal,
oh, right, like, yeah,
your clothes or something, or the only voices you're going to hear, it's either going to be a murderer or like, you know, somebody that you very much love. So you get used to like them in your very private sphere.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And yeah. That reminds me something I heard about, I forget when I heard, but anyway, about like, one of the reasons people react to celebrities this way or like TV stars, it's, you do feel like you know them because their faces are so huge on the screen. And the only time as humans, we really ever get that close to other people are when we're intimate with them to some level.
Oh.
So psychologically we're thinking like, oh,
fascinating.
I know you.
That is fascinating, because I do sometimes with like, I mean, clickbait works on me a little bit, but like when like celebrity couples break up or something, like I like genuinely feel like I need to help a friend go through a breakup or something, you know, like I feel bad for them, or like, especially couples where you're like, oh, I like that they're together. And then if it doesn't work out, you're like, oh, I'm pretty bummed about this. So you're like, I don't even know these people. Like,
that's funny. Cause that's how like now almost all our relationships with people are the same distance as a celebrity. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty
like,
much.
Unless you're got Gretchen, and then everybody in the world is like this, just
right
on a screen. Mm-hmm. Hi. Monica, one of the things I didn't know about you for a while was your basketball history.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a former and WNBA star, is that it? What was it?
It's jumping ahead. No, I played Division I basketball, but I got injured and didn't quite have the career that's worth Googling. Yeah. I mean, you can Google and see if it's true, but I didn't end up playing very much. But yeah,
was that your hope though before injury to the whole WNBA path? Or
I mean. And that was my whole life. I mean, I started playing when I was in first grade, and that's how I identified, you know, I was a basketball player. I was an athlete. And it honestly wasn't until I got hurt that I seriously considered doing stand-up.
Okay, that's what I was going to, I was wondering, were
it was
you
a weird the, transition.
Were,
I
you
know,
the funny, no. Were you the funny person on the team all the time, or?
Yeah, my like... my humor story is very interesting. I was like painfully shy as a child and just so quiet. And I'm still pretty audibly quiet. And so it would take like when I first got to my college team, I was so quiet. Like they would try hard. I feel like they felt like they needed, you know, like the kid that sits alone at lunch, like you want to go and be like, hey, you can sit with me, you know, like, I feel like they felt they needed to do that. Mm-hmm. And then I have this very quiet, subtle, like, I'll just say it to the person next to me type of thing. And it's kind of just for me. And so then it would slowly kind of get around that I was like kind of the clown of the team, and people thought I was funny. I just remember very distinctly my freshman year, because I had been hurt too. So I wasn't even in practice most of the time. So even my coaches didn't hear me talk very much. Yeah. Right. And so one of our coaches came in the locker room and they were like, what happened? And I don't know why, but I just knew this story. And so I just started telling it, and I'm like going, it's like a good 3 minutes of me just telling this story. And he just stops and he goes, that is the most I've ever heard you talk. And I was like, oh, I don't even think about it. But yeah, it was kind of like it's a gradual thing. And then like in high school and stuff too, I was so quiet, but then if anybody needed a story told, they were like, Monica's got to tell it. I don't know. Just let her tell it. Mm. So there was a bit of like, okay, I know I'm funny. I know I can talk in front of people when I'm comfortable. But it took a while.
What was your first show? Like, when did you first try stand up?
It was about 8 months after we had decided that I couldn't play basketball anymore. I was still in college. I was 20 years old, and I actually had looked up like open mics just in general. There was the Underground, and Giggles came up. I went to Giggles and it was closed at the time. Like, I went on open mic night, and then Terry or whoever it was outside like, oh, come back and we'll do comedy again sometime. Like, this was right when they were closing. And so then I waited probably another 6 months, and I went to Laughs when it was in Kirkland, lied about how many people I had brought. And then it went well. I'm always kind of embarrassed to say this, but I mean, there's a joke on my album that I have merch for currently that I did on my first open mic.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, I don't know, but I had gone and watched, and then the guy who was hosting knew one of my friends and then was kind of hitting on me, and he was like, well, just come and do it next week. And so I did. Like, that was the reason that I just went and did it. I think a lot faster, because I had, like, you look it up, you hear people's stories, and so many people, I remember Aaron Foley specifically was like, I went to my first open mic, I bombed so hard, so then I just watched for 6 months and then did it again. So I was prepared to like go and watch and kind of feel it out for a while, and then I went once, and then the next time, the next week, went up. And that's kind of, it was in January, which I think made a big difference, because there's those, now we know those audiences are the best for open mics, because there's a lot of resolution comics, they have to bring all their friends. Yeah. And even though I didn't bring anyone, there was quite a good crowd for an open mic. So
Do you think if it had been one of the dead ones that we get used to, when you first went, do you think you would have kept doing it, or did you like?
I think about that all the time. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I would have. I definitely wouldn't have gone back right away, you know. Or I don't know. It might have not gone at all. So the fact that Giggles was closed, because then I would have done my first open mic, or at least seen my first open mic, in the middle of the summer at Giggles, of all places. So it would have been a different experience.
I think if my second open mic had been my first one, I'm not sure I would have kept doing it.
Really? Yeah, because that's how
the location of it and everything, I was so like, what the hell is this?
I didn't start going, well, first of all, I was 20, so I didn't start going to like bar mics until a little bit later.
Oh, okay.
So I had just been doing the club's open mics. I went to the Underground and stuff, but it wasn't until quite a bit later that I even did like a Jai Tai. That would have been like a good bar open mic, you know?
Yeah.
So I probably got lucky in my idea of what all stand up was like.
Samantha, your first wasn't realistic, was it? Or was it a more realistic? Is it LA?
Yeah, but it was a.
So is LA realistic, right?
No, because I'd started working at this comedy club, I didn't think I was going to do stand up. I just was close to where I lived, and I thought it would be a good. I liked the people there. So I was like, okay, this might be good. And then, it turned out I could get like a discount on classes since I was working there.
Oh, nice.
And I think I can't remember I can't remember how long I was working there before I started taking classes, but I just met like a bunch of people that work there and bookers and stuff, but I had no idea nor did I care who they were in terms of what they could do for me. I just liked them as people. And then like when it turned out it was time to do stand up, then like people knew me, which was really nice and just happened to be in the right time at the right place at the right time sometimes to like ask like, oh, like I think I was cleaning up one of the rooms and I was like, how do people get to host? This looks like fun. And they were like, oh, well, actually, we just lost a host. Do you want to go talk to him? I know he thinks you're nice. Like, maybe you can get the spot. Because I think I probably asked the same day it happened. And then, so yeah,
that's funny.
I definitely was grateful for that blessing, for sure. And I didn't like take it for granted, you know. Took my classes, studied my jokes, you know. Yeah, but yeah.
And so, Monica, when did you decide that this was it for you, that you were?
I mean, I'm sure I decided after that first open mic. I was like, really? This is easy. I'm doing it. But I don't think I really took that seriously until I remember distinctly was working at a trampoline facility, like a one of those ones you go and jump and play dodgeball and that okay. stuff. And I was cleaning the bathroom and I had a bit of a breakdown. I had to call my mom because I was just like, I went from really identifying as an athlete to now not, you know, just cleaning this trampoline park bathroom for minimum wage kind of thing, you know? Yeah. And I was like, why am I doing this? You know, and she kind of was just like, this is all just a means to an end. And I was finishing my degree regardless. I was going to finish my degree. And so that part of it, but she kind of said like, I don't know if I had just been excited about stand up or what, but she kind of was like, this is, you're going to do something else. And so I think even maybe two years in, I had this idea of like, my goal was that I wanted to do it full time. That was it. And so even when I got another job after that, and after I had finished my degree, that was still the thought in my head was like, I need to be able to still do stand up. I need to eventually leave this place. And I did. And I went full time after 4 years, and it's been 5 that it's been full time. So
okay.
And then you got to make another goal. You're like, oh, I have it full time. What is this? Oh.
Yeah. You have a couple different things though, right? You have a motivation or a meditation bit, right? This ongoing meditation.
Yeah. So I started doing like guided meditation. On just YouTube, like once a month. And then over the last year that morphed into an album, like a separate album of guided meditations. And they're not like, I honestly think they're pretty relaxing, but they're like I swear, and they're funny and, you know, kind of jokey comedic, too. Yeah. So yeah. So yeah, it'll be weird. Cause my stand-up album just came out like a week ago or a week and a half ago. And this album, this meditation album, will come out at the beginning of December. So they'll be about a month between each other. Like, so I went from no albums to 2 in like a month. But I'm like more, you guys understand, like listening to your own stand up and listening to yourself. Eventually, I think it goes through waves where you're like, oh, this is good. I felt good about this recording. And then you're like, I'm so sick of hearing this joke. Like, and then you're like, all right, fine, just put it out. But with this, the meditations, I recorded them separately. I send them to a composer. He has original music that he has written for them. And so listening to that come together has been so much more entertaining for me. Like, I like kind of enjoy listening to them just to see what he's done with it. And it's that part is like more exciting. Up until now though, it hasn't necessarily been another source of income. So
right. I just knew it was a thing you did, like this meditation thing. And then you do this web series, right? It's the 80
for 80. 80 yeah, for 80. I made a couple years ago. I interview old people over the age of 80. And it's just a short, I think there's 5 episodes. It's on Amazon. It's basically just, they're very candid and say whatever they want. And so most of the humor is from them. I mean, obviously we ask them
yeah,
silly questions about Viagra and whatnot too. But and there's a little obviously heartfelt moments too. Yeah. There's a little wisdom in there. But that I actually got a grant to make years ago, and that was the first time anybody had paid me for an idea. Mm-hmm. You know, that like wasn't done. So that was pretty cool.
what made you decide on, do you have an affinity for the elderly, or what made you decide to do that?
I don't know if it's sad, but my grandfather passed away. My mom's mm-hmm. dad had passed away, and I felt like I had so many questions for him just about, I don't know. There was this idea that I had of like, that whole like, oh, they're on their deathbed. What would they say on their deathbed? Mm-hmm. You know, which is a sad thing. But I was like, oh, I just ask him, like, I want to know how he felt about his life. He was married like 5 times and like, he's a veteran and just all these, you know, like, I want to know why and who was his favorite wife and all this stuff, you know, like, I just wanted him to be honest, and I didn't have the opportunity. So it came from just wanting to ask now, you know, why you could. And so it was nice that we kind of created these things for their families to have. And we have actually lost one of the people who was in the series. And so they'll always have that, you know? And yeah. So that was kind of cool. But then also to talk to me, like all of them, it kind of took a little bit to warm up, you know, because they're kind of like, who is this person? What are we doing? You know, what did yeah. you talk me into kind of thing. But then as it would go, they were just like story after story. And some of their kids were like, what? We didn't even know this story, you know? So it kind of did what it was supposed to, which was just get really candid, honest things out of people who honestly don't give a shit anymore.
So, I mean, is that going to continue again, or was it just a one shot?
Yeah, I would love to. We had always talked about doing like kind of not themes, but like different places, you know, like it would be like, cause we filmed this one in the Northwest. So then it would be like the South and the Northeast and kind of compare how those stories were. But then we wanted to, talk to like the LGBTQ community over 80 would be so interesting to me, you know, or veterans or whatever, kind of like, right. That's theme is the wrong word, but categories, I guess.
Yeah.
And I love doing, it was so much fun. And, it would be so much more interesting now, but obviously more difficult to do now. So
yeah, you could kill them. Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to, but it's basically been kind of a financial thing okay. up until this point. So
do you see yourself doing more stuff that's like non stand up? Like, do you have an affinity toward acting or anything?
Not necessarily toward acting, but I think I have gotten a little bit of a bug for creating my own projects. Like, I really do kind of like having an idea and then just being able to make it, you mm-hmm. know, with 80 for 80 or the meditations or whatever. The reason I started kind of diversifying, and I'm sure you guys can agree, is to just have stuff for people to listen to when you're not on stage. You know, somebody saw you for 10 minutes and likes you. If they look you up, they're going to find your podcast or whatever, you know? Yeah. So it's the idea of having other stuff for people to check out. But I also realized I really kind of like real stuff a little bit more than like a sitcom type of situation. Like, I really liked the interviewing, like the meditations are goofy, but I genuinely meditate. So I think it's kind of like, I've never been a big fiction reader. Okay. I like nonfiction books because I can like apply it to my life. And so I think that's coming through. And what I like to create is like, I want people to be able to kind of use it and, I don't know, laugh at something that's really relatable to them that I haven't just manufactured, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. So I do really like making other things. I don't think will be more important than, or more fun, more fulfilling for me than stand up is, but I do like having other stuff. Or when people like your stand up, then you can go, I also have this stuff.
Yeah. You said, how long have you meditated?
Oh man. I think I first started, I know I tried when I was in high school, but I don't think I really ever took it seriously. But I really started to, like, every single day when I was 20, maybe a little bit before I started doing stand up. I developed pretty bad anxiety, like panic disorder. And that has helped a lot with that, which I fucking take pills or whatever, like do whatever is going to help you. I am not the person to be like, oh, just go for a hike. You'll be fine. Yeah. Cause that never has never worked for me. Cause I do all the things that you can do. And sometimes it's still terrible. So, yeah. But that's been like a real thing. I really like it. And, I'm also still pretty competitive. So the idea of like, it's just you and yourself and you can see if you can go longer and kind of when you get better at it, you go, oh, that was good. That was really good. I didn't really, mm-hmm. I didn't let any thoughts in on that one. So, and maybe that's just how I react to everything. I have to make it a game, but yeah, exactly.
You're going to meditate so hard, dude.
Yeah. When I think, and of course I've just like talked myself into this part, but it is seen as kind of like a hippy dippy, like thing. Mm-hmm. And I do want it to be like cool, which I know isn't like, I just want to make everything cool, but I think everybody, go to therapy, go meditate, whatever you need to do. Like it just shouldn't be something that you're afraid of. Like my dad sometimes is afraid to tell his friends that he like drinks green tea. And I'm like, what are you talking about? That's amazing. It's just like that toxic part of him. That's like, I don't want to tell him. They're going to make fun of me. So just do whatever you want to do.
Oh, what, you little tea drinker? You're drinking that tea.
Pinkies up.
You get those antioxidants in you, huh?
Right. Yeah.
Oh boy.
I do hypnosis on occasion, and that's it's a guided meditation. I'm told they're similar. I haven't been able to try just on my own meditating. I feel like I need to read some stuff to know what to do because I don't quite know.
Yeah, there's quite a few different, and it's like, it's one of the most difficult, simple things. You know what I mean? Like one of those where you're like, well, yeah, you just sit there. Okay. But it's, harder, and it just takes a lot of time. Like if you do 30 seconds when you first start, like that's a win, honestly. So you build on it every time, even what is like your watches, Fitbits come with like a 2-minute setting for the beginning part. And like, that's kind of a lot for sit meditation. There's so many different kinds because all it is focusing on one thing, which is why they often tell you to focus on your breathing and not think about anything else. If anything else pops up, you just let it go. So if you do like a repetitive motion, that can be meditation too. There's a lot of like Tai Chi type of stuff like that. It's the same thing. Oh, okay. And sometimes that's a lot easier for people. Like if you find there's another name that's literally like holding a pose. It's not yoga, but holding a pose and breathing. And that's like I think it's called Qigong, I think, but it's like supposed to, the different poses kind of put you where your energy would flow the best. And that, then you focus on that, like your legs are a little tight or, shaky and you're like, oh, that's all I think about. And so sometimes that's a little bit easier than just being like, I'm going to, cross my legs and breathe. So there's a lot of different ways to do it.
I do want to try. I think that'll be my 2021 goal.
Yeah. And fortunately, now? Silas, I hear there's this incredible album coming
out. I was going to say, there you go. Yeah. It's called Chill. There is a track. So a body scan is something that's very like basic. And all you do is you just basically go through each part of your body. So you'd be like left shoulder, left elbow, right elbow, because there's something where if you're focusing mentally on a certain part of your body, you can't think of anything else. So a body scan is like a very basic, easy way to do that. And I have one on the album. It's the longest track of just like scanning. And of course it's like, silly stuff, but,
is it technically meditation though, that if you're talking to me, cause how can I be thinking about something? How can I not be thinking about something
Because you're only focused on the one thing that I'm telling. I mean, you're still thinking about something when you're meditating, but it has to be just the one thing. It's just basically blocking all the other stuff out. Okay. So if I'm guiding you through a meditation and say, okay, take a deep breath in, close your eyes, that you're doing those things, then something might come in to try and distract you. The meditation is to just let it go by. Oh, okay. And do, you know, that kind of thing. And those, I mean, that's, I think some people can get frustrated in the beginning with like, well, these other thoughts are coming in. Like that's 100% what's going to happen. And it's just the, even if you start to think about it, you go, oh, oops, caught myself, push it aside and then go back to what you're doing. It's a, yeah, it's definitely a process.
Oh, I'm fascinated by that. There's few things in my life that I'm not thinking about a bunch of other stuff while I'm doing it. So, and yeah, it's something I've been wanting to do, and I definitely, I'll check that. Chill. When's it drop?
I don't know the actual date. It'll be the first week of December.
First week of December. Okay.
Yeah. Probably that first Tuesday. So.
Okay. All right. So Monica, the first time someone's on our show, we have 7 questions that we like to ask them. It's the world famous 7 questions.
I know. I want some theme music or like lights. Oh, yeah. I was thinking,
I'm gonna look it up. I bought a stock site.
Oh, I lost stock footage.
Stock, and stock music. Yeah. So 7 questions, just to answer them. There's no wrong answers. As brief or long as you want, whatever.
Okay. Is it like a rapid fire, like first thought, or just answer them?
Just answer them.
Just don't overthink it. Got it. Okay, cool.
Okay, number one. What are you most nerdy about?
Oh, women's basketball specifically. Because I feel like saying basketball is like, well, that's a job, that's like a sport, you know. Yeah. But women's basketball, nobody really cares about, so I'll say that before I was in college, I know like heights and weights of players that were popular at that time.
Okay. What's something that you love to eat?
Sushi.
Okay.
That's like my treat.
What's something that you love to drink?
Beer.
Okay. What kind of music do you love?
I love R&B.
Anyone in particular?
Oh man, I mean, I'm a 90s R&B fan. Right. And so I love a lot of Genuine. Some of his less popular songs are some of my favorites. Usher, Blackstreet was one that I think that was the first album where I knew like every single song to, that whole, Blackstreet album. Yeah, just that time. I mean, Mary J. Blige was the first, album I was ever given as a kid.
Okay.
So good.
Yeah. What do you love to create?
Funny stuff. I don't know. Just laughs. Things that make people laugh.
Okay. What's a game you love to play?
I mean, I want to say basketball, but honestly, I haven't played in quite a while. So, I love trivia. I love trivia games. Like I'll play Trivial Pursuit, any game, board game, but also like bar trivia, or like if they got one of those screen TV thing, I'll pay for it at Red Robin to play on the little thing.
Is it just general trivia at all? Like you just like knowing the trivial?
Yeah, info? I don't know. Yeah, like I love watching Jeopardy and all that stuff. I wonder where that comes from. I don't know.
Do you know all of the answers? Are you you love it and you're really good at it?
I love it and I'm not that good at it. I have my categories for sure that I'm like really good at, but
is it sports?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff where I'm like, I don't, why would you even know that? I don't know. But then I'm hopefully learning. Pretty commonly sports. Also like some science categories, biology and chemistry I will get before other pretty basic chemistry, but my degree's in sports and exercise science. So a lot of like body questions are pretty easy for me.
Okay. And last question. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Oh man. I think probably how nice I am. That's actually what that's a weird, I was going to say like resilience or something like perseverance, but the more, and especially in this industry, the more it goes, I do want to be known as someone who is nice. I mean, obviously I want to be known as someone who's funny, but, I kind of really like it when like the staff at a club likes me because I'm nice to them, or, you know, the other comics feel comfortable and I don't know, think I'm nice, I guess. That's a weird thing. But like, yeah, I kind of like the giving niceness kind of legacy. Yeah.
No, it's great. That's great.
That's what I want people to think. I'm really mean and tough.
All right, Monica Nevy, thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, really, thanks for having me.
So your two albums coming out soon, and people can catch you at Monica Nevy. Is that both at Monica Insta Nevy and Insta?
Yeah,
and
it's everything except for TikTok. TikTok's Monica Nevy Comedy because I made that a week before my album came out. yeah, and the album that's out, the stand-up album is called Mostly Finger Guns, and then the meditation album is called Chill. And yeah, everything else is just my name, MonicaNevy.com. Monica Nevy, everything.
All right. Terrific. Well, hey, normally you would catch her at a comedy club somewhere around the country, but I mean, soon, maybe?
Yeah, there'll be some trickling around.
It'll start coming there, but check out her album while you can.
Yeah.
Before they're sold out digitally.
Yeah. We'll make it there.
All right. Black Man House. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Awesome. Live long and prosper.